The Dana Cortez Show podcast begins now.
Welcome, Donnell Rawlings, to the Dana Cortez Show.
Let's go.
Make some noise.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel.
Donnell wants me to do a
it's
duet with him.
It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. It's new dawn. It's
so give me the significance of that song.
Let me finish the damn song.
Well, come on.
Ooh, and I'm feeling bad. But the significance of that song, first off, Nina Simone is a legend.
Yes.
Legend.
I did my special. I named it A New Day.
Yes.
Because I thought that, you know, when I did that special, it would be a new day in regard to my career, what I want to do in life. And I think that that song motivates people. People get inspired and they feel good. And it lets you know that you can choose when you want to start over or do something different in your life and become a new day. And that song resonated with me. It resonated during my Netflix special.
Wow.
And it continued to resonate in my life.
I think that the significance of what you just said
love
is so important.
Them and you said you want to do a duet.
Leave them. You haven't heard me sing yet, Donnell. That's why you're
did you hear me sing?
It. Yeah, you're better than me.
You guys might make the best duet of all time.
The best
that's
worst
what
duet
I used
of all
to
time.
Do, use but, you know, and abuse
the significance
them
of what you just said, though, is that it's never
so you're
too
not going
to
do the duet with me?
No, I can't do the duet.
All right.
I'm sad. I'm
just,
I
what do they call it? Wolf tickets. That's what they call it.
Wolf tickets over here.
Wolf tickets.
Yeah.
Starting over, it's never too late. It's not even starting over. It's just a revamp, a reshape, it's like one more chance at whatever it is you want to do. You've morphed into a whole different person.
So what you're saying is I went from ashy to classy?
Yes, and it's interesting because I even wrote this question down. Who dresses you?
Well, my guy, John Powell in L.A. La Contenta out of New York.
You know it's fancy when they say L.A. La Contenta?
Now, it's a bespoken brand. If whatever, I don't even know half this. This is how I started that.
Okay.
Maybe 3 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, a good friend of mine, real, real street dude, right? And I saw he had changed, right? Anytime in the black community, when you change your dress, your diet, or anything, we think you change your sexuality, right?
Oh.
So I was like, whoa.
You thought he was fluid. You
down with the other way
yeah,
now.
I was like, you down with the rainbow now? You wearing clothes that fit? We lost you, son.
What are you doing tailoring your stuff?
Exactly. But he, and I've always been, most of my career, never been a person that couldn't dress, but I was more like graphic tees, jeans, and like nice sneakers.
Yeah.
And then he was like, have you ever had, my guy Jason out of Brooklyn, he was like, have you ever had a tailored suit? I said, did somebody die? Am I going to court? Or is somebody getting married? But for the most part, in my community, that's the only suit you have for all three occasions.
Mm-hmm,
only thing you do is change your shirt and your tie, right? And he was like, I got this company in Brooklyn that wants to make a suit for you, and they want to pay you for it. I didn't even care about the suit. I was like, I'll take the money, right?
You're like, I don't care about dressing
and then when
a certain
way. And then when I did it, I just got addicted to it. It
you
just felt good.
Different.
Just the reception people have.
Felt like
the
a new man. It was a new day.
The respect that
and
you get.
You do, like, instantly. Like, that shouldn't be the case. Your character should define you. But people will tell you your first impressions is a lasting impression. When I started dressing like that, I realized, like, at the time, I'm 50 plus at the time, you know? So I'm like, you know what? And I even said in my stand-up routine, like, you got a guy that's going through a transition in his life. He don't know how old he is. You like, how old are you? You like, I'm 30, 50.
You're
you know
30,
what I'm saying?
I'm 30, 50.
I was like, and I was a Jordan guy and everything. And I was like, let me try to change my look. Because every year, I've been doing it for over 30 years. And every year, I think I get better in some regard. And I was like, how do I evolve into a better performer or visually? And I was like, if I step my dress up, you know what I mean? The comedy is always going to be there. I'm like, if I step my dress up, then, you know, people will notice that and it'll take me to the next level. And that's
more opportunity.
Yeah. It's,
well, I think Bill, it adds something. It's like you're already the sundae. You put that cherry on top.
I'm
you
tell
made
you,
it
women,
pretty.
And this is when you know that you stepped into a different level when it comes to dress. When men hate it.
Oh.
I'm telling you. When men start roasting you, what you doing tight with that tight? When men
you're
start
like,
roasting you, like
this.
You're like, I got it. I'm telling you. When the men hate, and when the gays love, that's when you know you're dressing.
If the gays,
if you get a couple yazzes, you in.
Yes. Yeah. Ooh, you look good. Snap.
Yeah.
If you look good to a gay man, you have really reached the upper echelon of looks. You realize that, right?
They really, really critical of that.
Yes. Oh, of course.
Yeah,
of
they're
course.
Really critical of it. They're honest about it, too.
Oh, they will tell you if you don't look good, the suit's not right.
And I even heard that there was a strict dress code when they went to the Diddy parties, too.
Did you ever go to any Diddy parties?
No, I got to tell you a story.
Okay.
He almost got me. Now, he didn't almost get me, but... This is what I'm not knocking the dude. The relationship that I've had with Diddy and the opportunities
until proven guilty, yes.
Yeah, the opportunities he's given me were like the Bad Boys of comedy. And then I would cross his path and all. He was always cordial and everything. And one year I did go to a party. It was in St. Bart's, right?
Okay.
And he does like winter.
What year was that?
It was probably like 4 years ago.
I was going to say, I remember that it was all over social media. He does like, they do themes and stuff. Yeah,
it was a thing. And it was a Christmas thing. And I'm telling you, it was the best party I've ever been to in my life. Now, it was a day party. I don't know what happens on the night parties. It was a day party. But what I saw, and it's so interesting how all this is going to play out. Because what I saw was a guy that was into his family. All his baby moms were there. His exes were there. And it was like people, like some really dope people. They was there with their families. We had a good time. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, not to like throw crap on him or whatever, but that party was a good time. He made everybody feel good. It was, he was a great host. But then there was a time to leave.
Did it start to change?
Where the vibe?
Did the vibe start to change down
there? Nah, for me... No, the vibe didn't change at all. It was
you
a family thing.
Just had a
thing.
Feeling.
Here's this one.
Jelly Roll said, I don't know if you saw this. You know who Jelly Roll is, right?
Yeah,
20 years ago, hip hop. Now he's doing country.
Yeah.
He said he was about to meet him recently, and then he felt something. He just turned around. He's like, I don't want to meet him.
Everybody's gonna say that. It's like bandwagon. Somebody say one thing, then it's like, I don't, you know what the situation is with that. But I think if anything comes out, what's gonna come out is to find out that he's a freakazoid. You know what I'm saying?
And everybody's known that, though. I've been hearing those stories forever.
I don't understand, like the parties that they, let's just say he hosts, I don't see any difference between parties that Hugh Hefner threw and parties that always existed in Hollywood.
Well, there's one word here that we're talking about, and Cassie brought it up in her deposition, or rather her lawsuit. It's consent.
You gotta ask?
You gotta ask.
Oh.
Damn.
That part.
Did he?
That part. You do.
See, if you're down to be a freak, I'm all, you go do your thing, you do whatever. But if you're not asking folks, you're slipping Quaaludes, and you're doing stuff like that, you're pulling Harvey Weinstein's.
Yeah, no, I agree
it's
with you.
It's a new day and age, and that poor woman, Cassie, the hell she had to go through.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's just going viral.
So back to
right
my special. New day.
Now that got really heavy.
No, I'm just, this is like Hollywood, whatever. It's like you have mixed feelings. You have a relationship with someone one way.
That's right.
It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yes, exactly.
You have a relationship with one. You know this person as this person. But the world or anybody else or anybody that doesn't feel like
you. There's a dark side of that
person.
There's
a dark side.
And you're not a part of that.
And the thing that I do know, that I don't know the dark side of Diddy. Dang, that sounds like a show right there.
I don't know the dark side of Diddy. Coming soon to Netflix.
I do remember once I was coming out of a club and I was having issues with my baby mama, right? Baby mother. Mm-hmm. For the white people, the mother of my child.
The mother of my child.
And I was like, what do you do, man? I was like, man, she get on my goddamn nerves, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. I'm going back and forth. And he grabbed my shoulders like this. He looked at me and said, be nice to her. And at that point, I was like, I know it sounds weird after you knowing what he's been accused of.
The dark side.
But when he said, be nice to her. And I was like, this guy must be on one right
but
now.
But hold on.
I don't want to be nice.
Well, that was brother love.
Yeah.
It changes everything.
Yeah, that was a brother love I saw. He was like, be nice to her. And I was like, I don't know. And then I kind of, and it's tough. And I know people go through co-parenting situations. It's an easy thing, easier said than done. But I did realize that in my relationship with my baby mama, being nice to her, don't get me nowhere, man. That was the worst advice anybody ever gave me in my damn life. Go to jail, Diddy. Guilty. I'm nice to her. What she do? She don't give a damn.
I know.
About it, Diddy. You the worst relationship counselor on the planet. Take that.
She gave you the best gift
and
of
I
all time.
And I listened to this dude.
Oh.
She gave you the best gift ever.
And
you should have listened to Puffy.
I will say that. You're right.
She gave you the best gift ever.
I will say that. Like, people like, I love my baby mom. Often, we don't get along. And then when that happens, and it's a tougher situation for me because my son looks just like her. So I'm like this, how could I look in his face, not see her face, and love what she did for me?
Right.
And like what you said, and I know people go through this relationship and co-parenting situations where it's like, oh, I can't stand her. I don't feel that way about her. And I know, like, it doesn't matter how upset I get in certain situations or whatever, it's always going to be something that makes me reflect on what she gave me, especially me having my son in an older period of my life.
You appreciate it more because of where
and
you are.
I ain't going to front. It's tough. It's very, very tough at times. And I know I'm not just a person that's just experienced myself, but then when I look at it, I look at what she gave me. Then I also look at the great mom that she is. It kind of makes me tone down on some things that I would normally be angry about.
Oh, I love that so much.
It's the truth. And I'm saying it's not easy. I would say I got a relative.
That's all women want is to understand that we give up everything. We give up our bodies. We give up the time. We give up everything to bring that life into this world and to just hear that.
There's nothing like that can come close to it. But on the other side of that, I mean, and if you're in a healthy relationship, and I think you can't compare like mom and dad, but, you know, I'm old school. I believe in protect, provide. You know what I'm saying? I believe in taking care of a person. And with you, this is how I feel. If you give me that gift, you gave me that, then it's me as a man, I'm going to do everything to make your life easy. Like, we not even, with me and my baby mom, we not even together anymore, and she don't have to work.
You take care of her.
Yeah, I take care of
her. You and little Wayne. Wayne takes care of all. How many children is he?
Like
I don't
10,
even know.
Yeah.
He takes care of all of them.
Yeah.
And he says, this is, unlike his own father, he's like, I'm going to take care of my children. These are my gifts. These are my blessings.
Now, I'm not saying this specific to Wayne. I don't know what his situation is as a dad, but I think that the misunderstanding about taking care of a kid is not just I pay a certain amount of money.
No, you got to be present.
Be present.
P-R-E-S-E-N-T, not just presence.
But, and that's
throwing,
why
throwing money at
that's
the situation.
Why when the women I really despise that use their kids as pawns in relationships.
It's true.
Can't stand that. Especially
you can't
when,
do it. You
especially
can't.
When it shouldn't all come down to how much money you give.
Nope.
Because you have certain situations. Like when I was growing up, my mother and father weren't together. My father was a big a drug dealer in D.C. He passed away about 5 years ago, R.I.P. But my mom, and as much money as he had, my mother didn't care about that. She wanted him to have the quality time with us. So when you got these women out here that compromise that and keep these arguments going or whatever, just to control
that relationship,
that's not fair.
Now, the rent is high.
Yeah.
We do need a little help out here.
I'm not saying that. No.
The rent and the light bill gets...
Yeah, but like, there's life experiences that you can't get through money.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
But
that's invaluable. That's a priceless
thing. Rent is high.
Money ain't going to teach you how to save.
You have men that have the money. Rent is high. But then you have men out here, that let's say that financially, they can't give like that. There's other things that they can give that's going to contribute to that guy being that kid being
but
a good human.
I agree with you 100%. There are women who do that, but I don't want to discount the 89% of single parents who are women that do a very good job. You know, I was a single mom.
I don't want to talk about the good women. I'm talking about the horrible ones.
Yeah. You can keep, good ones.
Keep that positive
stuff.
You and Diddy can keep y'all advice for somebody else.
Don't you put me in that damn barrel.
She was out, as long as you ain't start clapping your hands, that's why I know it gets serious.
No, see, Donnell trying to turn it around. Now, no, sir.
No, I understand that. I agree with you.
Yeah, how you, because you were raised by a single mother. You know how difficult it is. How'd you get this Netflix special? Because you know Chappelle. How do I get to know him?
Well, come out to...
You're both from D.C., right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that area. But that wasn't what got me the Netflix.
I know it's not.
No,
obviously.
But I'm just saying the relationship.
Talented.
The interesting thing was, during the pandemic, we were doing, we had a bubble. We were doing shows out in the cornfield, right?
Mm-hmm. I was watching those,
And then when me and Dave be on the road a lot of times, he don't really see my show because he usually in the green room or whatever.
Yeah.
And for some reason, when Nick was in this contained environment where we saw each other every night, he always knew I was funny. But he just kept seeing, like, every day. I was one out of all the comments used to come in. I was one of the only comments that always changes material. Every night, it was going to be something different. And he really got to hone in on what I really do. And what people want to believe is, like, I probably can't do it. Like, could you produce my special? Could you do this? I've never... One thing with my relationship with Dave Chappelle, I never ask him for a business favor. I've never once said, could you do this for me?
He probably respects that, don't
I? I keep our relationship just enough on friendship.
Yep.
I never say, hey, I got this idea. I've never said that to him. So after working in the cornfields with him for so long, he was so impressed. He's like, he asked me, he's like, would you let me produce your special? And I said,
did you think about it?
No. He said, will you let me produce your special? I said, let me talk to my people. Right?
No, you didn't.
And I turned around and looked at the mirror. And I was like, do you think that's a good idea, Donnell? I talked to my people. I was like, yeah, I just get talk to my people. And they said, that sounds good.
Did you do that right in front of him?
Yeah, I turned around.
And that's why he did it.
But listen, so this is the crazy thing was, this is what he wanted to do during the pandemic, but there's no place for us to do it in the pandemic.
Right, obviously.
So about a summer goes past, and it's like, and I hadn't been working or making any money. I was like, man, I need to get this damn check. When are we going to do this special? So this was like at the tail end of the pandemic. Then he said, we found a spot in Charlotte, North Carolina, right? And they still had the COVID protocol. You had to have a vaccination card.
Yeah.
You had to get a shot. So when we did it, we did one night, two shows. The first show, Netflix turned away literally like 75% of the audience
because of
what you needed to get right? So that was a bummer to start. So I know it's like, that's kind of tough for a performer. This is a big deal.
There's like five people out there.
It wasn't that much, but it wasn't like
I get what you're saying. Yeah, you need that energy. You feed off of that.
But you feed off of it. But I also knew that if the crowd is not giving me what I want, I'm performing for the cameras. And you could do a lot of things in post to make it feel right. So I did that first show, and it went good. And then in the middle of that show, Dave was like, yo, if we don't get it now, we can shoot it again. I was like, you giving me that check.
I'm like, yo. Get it down.
And that was a big boy check, too. Yeah, right? I'm like, I don't know. I blocked him out. Yeah. I said, let me talk to my people. Right? I turned around again. I was like, what the hell is he talking about? I was like, Dave, we're going to do it. We did the second show. Ripped it. Stan Lathan, I got to stand. If I told this story on a lot of platforms, people don't understand. You go to different platforms, you share the same story. So, ripped it. Stan Lathan, one of the best producers in the business. He did Def Jam, Ricky
shout
Hughes.
Out
Otto is friends with Tin Donji, his son.
Yeah. So, we did it. We got it in a can. And this was Earthquake had did his special. And the whole thing, it was called a home team. These were guys that Dave picked out that he thought deserved a special that the industry, for some reason, didn't see it that way. So me and Earthquake had announced in the trades that we're coming out with specials, right? Maybe a week after we make that announcement, I get a call from Dave. And I'm like, what's up? Right? I know you're in the editing room. Blah, 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 blah. We about to do this. Then he was like, D, you're going to get mad at me. And
as soon
as he said that, I instantly was mad, but I didn't know what I was mad about.
but you already know.
I knew, like, you're right. I'm going to be mad, that voice. And then he said, I want to do your special again. I was like, what? Because that's to tell a comedian, you want to do their special again, the first
thing
you think.
That's an ego thing. First of all, did I suck?
That's the first thing you think. Was it not funny?
Was I not good?
And especially when, in that moment, you know when something is questionable. In that moment, I knew I killed it. In that moment, then he said, I want to do it again. And I said,
why?
Silence, like a minute, right? I'm quiet. He was like, D, hello? Hello? I was like, Dave, how do we go from getting a stand to know? We all said we got it. It's in the can until you want to shoot it again. And then he said something to me. He said, D, you're one of the funny comedians I know. He said, I can put you in any room and you're going to rip the room. He said, but that does not make it a great special. He said, out of all the people I'm doing this with, yours is the most anticipated because of the relationship with the Chappelle Show. Not to slight Lunel, not to slight Earthquake, but they're not as connected with me as in the Chappelle brand.
I understand
brand.
That just with facts. The whole Ashy Larry and the whole, I get it. It's just facts.
He's like, people want yours. And he said, if we're going to do this, he said, we want to do something classic. I was like, but it was funny. He was like, yeah, but he said, you had a...
Funny and classic, two different things.
And he also said, it's a lot of COVID jokes in there, right?
They're not going to live long.
And he said, I've seen you do those jokes better. I said, Dave, I seen you do jokes better before your special. I'm making arguments, right? But then
you arguing with Dave Chappelle?
I am. Creatively, I don't care who it is, if I feel a certain way. But I had to fall back because I'm like, this is a guy who knows what he's doing. You know what I'm saying?
Countless specials behind him, right?
He gets it. And even with this, he said, Donnell, I'm not going to tell you the jokes, dude. He said, you work on your jokes, and I'll do the bells and whistles.
Okay, so my question, Donnell, is, are you glad that you redid the special?
Let me tell you. So after, and then another thing that was easy for me to take, my check had already cleared.
Oh,
so you're
like,
so it was just like, whatever.
I've been paid, no
y'all
matter
not
what,
gonna get the money back. You can forget that. That's not gonna happen. But so, you know, but I was so excited because I'm like, I want to get this out there. Even though my career was doing well, I wanted this calling card for people to see what I do as a stand-up. So we squashed that one. And maybe, I think maybe 8 months after that, we were doing some shows in Napa Valley, California. And he always records all of his shows, mm-hmm. right? So he looks at the producer. We're in the green room, me, him, and the producer, Ricky Hughes. And he says, Ricky, how many cameras do we have here tonight? She said, we got 5. Then he looks at me and says, Donnell, you want to shoot your special? I said, when? He said, tomorrow. I was like this, let me talk to my people, right? I turned around and I said, get that suit, we're doing it, right? And the thing that I was excited about this go was that it wasn't anticipation of the special. It wasn't been built at a special. I didn't have to worry about guest lists for family members. It was going to be so under the radar.
Yeah.
Nobody knew what we was doing but the 3 people that was in that room. And I was excited about it. Our idea was to do it and they'd be like, Netflix, bam, we got it. And I slayed that show, right? This is the second time.
Knowing that it's
I was like, oh, we got it. I called Robbie Prawl from Netflix. I was like, we got it. He was like, well, let me see it. I was like, oh. About 3 days later, Dave calls me again. He said, I want to do it again. I was
No, he didn't.
I'm like, what's going on, son? I said, why? He said, I didn't like the production. I was like, you're the producer. You don't like yourself, self hate.
You don't like your work?
Right.
That's
it's
not
me.
My fault.
Hi, I'm
Dave
the problem.
Chappelle.
It's me. Right. But then what he said was, and he said, because when you do a taping, it's usually you have an audience coordinator to let people know, don't go to the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stay in your seat. Don't move around. But we were just winging it. So there was people walking past, and it was like issues with like the lighting, but it was things that we could have fixed in post.
But it was his idea.
And I'm not mad at the fact that we took another stab at it, and it would have been so dope.
Wait, Doug, you did it a third time?
Let me tell you. So that didn't work out, right? And I was like, all right. Now I'm like, we probably never going to do this. And then I'm looking at my schedule. I'm looking at his schedule. I said, we're never going to find a time.
What happened?
But I was part of the New York Comedy Festival, and it was a nice venue.
Yeah, yeah.
And I looked at his schedule. I saw that he was off. I said, yo, I got an idea. I said, why don't we just bring the cameras into a space
I'm booked. It's done. It's booked. Beautiful.
Yeah. And then
sold out.
We did that one. We did 2 shows. The first show, it was very funny, but it's a certain energy you want to hear the producers. Like the first show, I got off stage and Ricky came into me and she said, we got what we need. That's it. You understand it, but you don't want people to make your special work in production.
No, you know what I'm saying?
He
said, to rip on stage.
She said, we got what we need. And I was like, I know what that means. I was like, we did, but I hadn't caught my stride like I wanted. And then I had the suit on. I took the suit off. I kicked everybody in my green room. I put a hoodie on. I burnt a candle. And I just started hearing Eminem's. I started hearing Eminem, Lose Yourself in
the
music.
My God.
His Mom's Palms
spaghetti.
Are sweating.
All that,
spaghetti. And I heard his mother's spaghetti not that good, according to Benzino. But so I went back.
I heard Benzino's not like, a great dad, according to his daughter.
I heard that.
You heard that, didn't you?
Yep. And
I know you did.
And it kept resonating in my head. It's a new day. It's a new dawn. And that was the intro song I chose. And normally when I sing, come out to that song, it's really, really quiet until I hit the stage. But that second show, when they played that song, people stood up and they did not stop clapping.
And it was the energy.
It was energy. They did not stop clapping. And I couldn't even hear the song anymore. And when I walked out, I was like this. It's on. The energy that you see when I went out there, there's nothing fake about that. I was feeling it. And after that, it was like, I was like, I got it. And the thing is, this is what people are critical about everything. Like, if you see my show now, right, and I got all new material, you would say, I like that show better than the special. But This is the two, a comedian, when they do a special, the best they are is before they do the special and after they do the special.
Right, right.
Building up to it, getting that together. But when it's like lights, camera, action, sometimes it's hard to capture what really happened in that room. I captured it. Whether you, comedy is subjective to what style you like. But, and the thing about this, was that special the funniest I've ever been? If you know people that follow me, they see me smash everywhere. But in that moment,
it was that energy.
In that moment, it was right there. Now you come and see my show. Now you're like, oh my God, because I'm always going to evolve. It's always going to be stronger. And the thing, like, well, I know the next one I do, and even if you come see me, the thing that's dope is that I'm a student of this, right? And I'm always going to get better. After 30-something years, every year, I get better. And I learned so much. I learned so much from the process of that last special. Now I'm locked in. Now I'm like, I'm doing, it's not, I'm doing jokes that are transparent. I'm doing stuff that resonates with mm-hmm, my life. Mm-hmm. And even if you saw New Day, it was something for everybody in there.
I got to say something, yeah. Donnell. That's the key right there. You gave everybody the keys. It is constant evolving. The one thing we can all for sure know that's going to happen is change.
Yeah.
And if you don't evolve, if you don't continue the evolution of yourself in whatever craft you do, you might as well just
and
quit
that's why
now.
I'm 55 years old, right? And I was telling one of my friends the other day, I said, at 55, I feel like I'm about to blow up. And people will say, you already there.
I was going
to
say.
The reason.
Yeah. But you I still feel got, like there's, no, there's
always,
more.
Always. I feel like I'm about
there
to blow.
Is. There's and always also, another rung on the ladder.
There's always
another.
And I say, at 55, the people, that's, a lot of comedians that started me, they can't say they're about to blow up. And I'm not talking down anything because they're not in a position. They don't have the contacts. They haven't built these relationships. And it doesn't matter how good they are, they're not in a position. It's like, it's not about this business just about being funny.
You got to build opportunity and then you utilize that opportunity to grow. I've always said there's hardworking people all over. It's not just enough to work hard or be funny or whatever the case is. Opportunity, you grow and you build the next opportunity and so on and so on.
You got to keep
you
coming.
You have to.
And a lot of people of my age has been doing this. They get upset. They hate these comics that are making it off of social media, whatever. But I was like this. The resources they have are the same resources for you.
Either you work it and keep it moving. You can do whatever you want to do. This white man to the left of me is giving me the eye. He wants us to give some tickets away.
Oh, man. Yeah, let's give some tickets away.
Not automatic. Not my husband.
No.
It's my gift. A whole bunch of other questions.
I know.
Nah, we can grow. But
we can do this all day. You got to come back.
But I tell you, I'm at a good place.
You're in a good place.
It doesn't. My thing is, it doesn't matter if I don't care about being a film star. I don't care about being a TV star because most of my career, those things haven't supported me financially or anything. I've done them. I get some good work when I get it. But the thing that I care most about, and people can see it when I perform, is that stage show. I'd rather be a comedy star. That way, guess what? NBC can't control me. Corporations can't control me. If I can build that to the point, like my boss are the people that paid money to come see me. When they done with me, then I'm done. But as long as I got that base and people want to come see what I've been doing for over 30 years, not too many people can say they ever see me bomb. Not too many people can ever see. You got maybe, I know this sounds crazy. Out of a career of 30 years, I probably have had maybe noticeable 15 or 20 sets that I didn't like. And those sets weren't
all those years.
Yeah. And those sets weren't bad. It just was, it either wasn't connecting or something happened.
It wasn't up to par.
Yeah. But
Donnell, thanks for taking the time to talk.
Thanks for listening to me. And I'm feeling good.
The Dana Cortez Show Podcast.